It's overcast in Jacksonville at 76 degrees. I'm speaking plainly with Bill Hay in 30 minutes here on Talk Radio WBOB.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. At our clinic here in Jacksonville, Southside Medical Center, we see many patients who come to us with a complaint of back pain, most with low back pain. At that very first visit, it's my job as a physician to get as many facts as possible concerning the pain, such as what may have caused it, what treatments have already been used, which of the treatments that have been used have helped, and which ones didn't. I also try to find out the other medical problems the patient may have and the treatments used for those medical problems. Many times during the interview stage of the first visit, the patient will tell me that they have sciatica or that their previous physician diagnosed them with sciatica. Most who tell me this pretty much understand the basic symptoms, but most have no real solid idea what it is, how it can be treated, and what ways we have to alleviate the symptoms and maybe even cure the disease itself. So today Carmen and I are going to talk about sciatica.
First, the spelling of it. It is spelled S-C-I-A-T-I-C-A. Yes, just as in the word science, the C is silent.
When I was young and first heard the word, I thought that the word started with a silent P, like in pneumonia, which starts with the letter P, not N. So now you know, S-C-I-A-T-I-C-A.
The term sciatica simply describes a syndrome with the symptoms of leg pain, and possibly tingling, numbness, or weakness that originate in the lower back and travel through the buttocks and down the large sciatic nerve in the back of each leg.
As such, sciatica is really not a medical diagnosis in and of itself, but a symptom of an underlying medical condition.
There are several causes of sciatica, including lumbar herniated disc, degenerative disc disease, spondylolisthesis, and spinal stenosis.
So you go to see a doctor with back pain and leg pain and maybe some numbness in your leg. You could suspect sciatica, but maybe there's another cause. First, what makes a physician suspect sciatic nerve pain? Well, the doctor should take into account all the symptoms and signs.
Sciatica is often characterized by one or more symptoms, including constant pain in only one side of the buttock or leg, but rarely in both legs. Also, pain that is worse when sitting, leg pain that usually described as burning, tingling, or searing rather than a dull ache, as well as weakness, numbness, or difficulty moving either leg, foot, and even the toes.
Symptoms could include a sharp pain that may make it difficult to stand up or walk, as well as pain that radiates down the leg and possibly even into the foot and toes. Remember, it is not always a constant and incapacitating pain. It can also arise as an infrequent and irritating pain. While symptoms can be painful and potentially debilitating, it's rare that permanent sciatic nerve damage or even tissue damage will result. Now that we've talked about the symptoms, you may be interested in exactly what the sciatic nerve is and where it's located.
The sciatic nerve is the largest single nerve in the body, and it is made up of individual nerve roots that start by branching out from the spine in the lower back and then combine to form the sciatic nerve.
There are usually five lumbar vertebrae in the lower back. They're called L1 through L5. The spaces between them are named for the five vertebrae. In other words, we have four spaces in the lumbar spine. L1 to 2, L2 to 3, L3 to 4, and of course L4 to 5. But it does not end there, since there are generally three segments to the sacral spine called S1, S2, and S3. These are just below the lumbar and are generally fused, meaning there's no movement between them. So we have a space between the L5 and the S1 segments.
When we talk about the sciatic nerve, we are really talking about a group of nerves that exit the lumbar and sacral regions and unite to make one fat nerve called the sciatic nerve. At its widest point, it is about the thickness of a human thumb.
There are two nerve roots that exit the lumbar spine, L4 and L5, and three that exit the sacral segment, S1, S2, and S3. All five nerves bundle together to form the sciatic nerve, and then branch out again within the leg to deliver motor and sensory functions to specific destinations in the legs and feet.
This thick nerve then runs down through an opening in the pelvis and runs under the first muscle it encounters, called the piriformis muscle, which it often affects.
The sciatic nerve then travels down the back of the thigh to a point just above the back of the knee. It is here that it divides into two branches, the tibial nerve and the common peroneal nerve, both which serve the lower leg and foot. Certain conditions in the lower back can irritate the sciatic nerve, causing sciatic or lumbar radiculopathy. Now, depending on where the nerve is compressed, as it leaves the spine, you may feel different symptoms.
We have already mentioned the three most common causes of sciatica, those being herniated and degenerative disc, as well as spondylolisthesis and spinal stenosis. But there are several other that include piriformis syndrome, pelvic tumors, and compression by a baby's head during pregnancy.
One of the ways to determine if the cause of sciatica is a herniated disc is to perform a test called the straight leg raising test. With the patient lying on his or her back and the leg raised, then the test is positive if pain shoots below the knee.
There are exceptions, such as when bowel or bladder function is affected, but for the most part, a positive test means a herniated disc. Treatment initially is usually with pain medications and anti-inflammatories. Often all that is required is time, because in about 90% of people, the problem goes away in less than 6 weeks.
If the pain is severe and lasts for more than 6 weeks, then surgery may be an option. While surgery often speeds pain improvement, long-term benefits are really unclear, but surgery may be required if complications occur, such as bowel or bladder problems.
Do you know that up to 40% of people have sciatica at some point in time? It is most common during people's 40s and 50s, and men are more frequently affected than women.
Other compressive spinal causes include lumbar spinal stenosis. That's when the spinal canal, where the spinal cord runs through, narrows and compresses the spinal cord. Another cause is narrowing caused by bone spurs, spondylolisthesis, and inflammation. Now, we've mentioned a syndrome before called piriformis syndrome. Remember when we mentioned that the sciatic nerve runs below the piriformis muscle in the upper thigh? However, in less than 20% of the population, the sciatic nerve runs through the piriformis muscle rather than beneath it. So when the muscle shortens or spasms due to trauma or overuse, it may just cause compression of the sciatic nerve. Piriformis syndrome causes sciatica when the nerve root itself remains normal and no herniation of a spinal disc is apparent.
Pregnancy can also cause sciatica as a result of the weight of the fetus pressing on the sciatic nerve. During sitting or during leg spasms, sciatica can also be caused by tumors impinging on the spinal cord or the nerve roots.
We have also mentioned the term spondylolisthesis of the vertebrae, which can also cause sciatica. That term, spondylolisthesis, simply means vertebral displacement in any direction where the vertebrae seem to shift from front, back, or to either side.
Forward displacement is often called anterolisthesis, while backward displacement is called retrolisthesis.
It's time for our mid-show break, so Carmen and I will be back in just a moment. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I ended the first half of the show talking about vertebral displacements, both anterior and posterior displacements, called anterolisthesis and retrolisthesis. Ever heard of Hangman's fracture? Well, it's a specific type of spondylolisthesis, where the second cervical vertebrae is displaced forward, and that's due to a fracture of the vertebra's pedicles, with the pedicles being the first two portions of the vertebral arch just behind the vertebral bodies. The mechanism of this injury is forced hyperextension of the head, meaning that the head is forcibly bent backwards at the neck. And it's called the hangman's fracture because the noose would be placed below the condemned subject's chin. When the subject was dropped, the head would be forced into hyperextension by the full weight of the body with a sufficient force to cause the fracture.
One study of a series of such hangings showed that only a small minority of hangings produce a hangman's fracture, but the name still sticks.
We've talked about herniated discs. So what is a vertebral disc? Let's start with the annulus fibrosis, which is a tough circular exterior of the intervertebral disc. It surrounds the soft inner core of the disc, which happens to be called the nucleus pulposus. This outer portion is really a ring of ligamental fibers that encases the inner core of the disc, and it securely connects the vertebra above and the vertebra below the disc. The purpose of the annular fibers are to prevent the gelatinous nucleus pulposus from herniating, which means leaking out of the disc. You might be asking, how does it do that?
It hydraulically seals the nucleus and evenly distributing any pressure and forces that are imposed on the intervertebral disc. When there is a tear in the annulus fibrosus, the nucleus pulposus could leak through the tear and press against spinal nerves within the spinal cord or any of the exiting nerve roots.
This can cause inflammation, numbness, and excruciating pain. Inflammation of the spinal cord can also spread to adjacent facet joints and cause lower back pain or even referred pain in the posterior thighs. That's right, in the back of the thighs. Remember that the discs cushion the spine from compressive forces, but they're weak to pressure applied during rotational movements. So what does this mean? Well, this is why a person who bends to one side at a bad angle to pick something up may more likely herniate a spinal disc than a person actually jumping from a ladder and landing on their feet.
In general, patients usually are advised to start with a course of conservative care, meaning non-surgical treatment, prior to considering spine surgery for a herniated disc.
However, for some patients, early surgical intervention could be beneficial. For example, when a patient has progressive major weakness in the arms or legs due to nerve root pinching from a herniated disc, having surgery sooner can stop any neurological progression. In such cases, without surgical intervention, nerve loss could occur and the damage could be permanent.
For lumbar and cervical herniated discs, conservative treatments can usually be applied for around 4 to 6 weeks to help reduce pain and discomfort. There is simply no hard and fast rule as to what treatments would be beneficial in the conservative phase of treatment.
A process of trial and error is often necessary to find the right combination of treatments. Patients may try one treatment at a time or may even find it helpful to use a combination of treatment options all at one time. Again, for example, treatments focused on pain relief, such as medications, may help patients better tolerate other treatments, such as manipulation or physical therapy. In addition to helping with recovery, physical therapy is often used to educate patients on good body mechanics. In other words, proper lifting techniques, which help to prevent excessive wear and tear on the discs.
For those patients who experience severe pain and a high loss of function and don't find relief from conservative treatments, surgery may be considered as an option.
if you've completed weeks or months of conservative herniated disc treatment without relief from your symptoms, then consider treatments such as laminectomies, where some bone or disc material is removed that's pressing against the spinal cord or opening the narrowed space. Another surgical plan is to do a foraminotomy.
If a pinched nerve occurs in a foramen, which is just a medical term for a small opening in which nerve roots run through the spinal column, the surgeon will remove a portion of the spinal tissue that is constricting the foramen.
Hopefully, this will relieve nerve compression. Now, there are still other types of minimally invasive type surgery, such as the discectomy, which allows the surgeon to remove some disc material that's pinching the nerve.
Another is the lateral lumbar interbody fusion that may be used to relieve back pain by removing damaged disc material and bone spurs, as well as by widening the space within the spinal canal.
A prosthetic disc can actually be used to replace a damaged vertebral disc. Fusions can be done with bone grafts and spacers to decompress pinched nerves and provide spinal stability to the affected area. Well, a sales representative for the drug maker Warner Chilcott, codename Pampers, was used in the investigation of the company to show that it was using payments and perks to get physicians to prescribe its drugs. Then, its sales representatives gave nurses hot tips about what kinds of symptoms would get Medicaid to pay for the drugs.
The representatives also violated privacy laws by going through patients' files and kept fax machines in their cars to fill out the paperwork meant for doctors.
The Center for Public Integrity began investigating the influence of the pharmaceutical industry on state Medicaid programs. Prescription medications under those programs cost states tens of billions of dollars annually. The company, Warner Chilcott, which is now owned by Allergan, was trying to beat one of the few mechanisms set up by state Medicaid agencies to hold down drug costs for taxpayers and ensure safety for patients. Medicaid, which uses state and federal tax dollars to pay for health care for 76 million poor and disabled Americans, tried to ensure that patients get drugs that work the best and yet are still affordable. States put those drugs on what they call preferred drug lists. While Medicaid must pay for nearly all drugs by law, states can make it harder to get more expensive or less effective drugs by requiring physicians to fill out cumbersome administrative paperwork to prescribe those not on the preferred lists.
In the case of Warner Chilcott's, their practices were illegal because the employees submitted false information to states, and eventually they pleaded guilty to felony health care fraud and agreed in 2015 to pay $125 million in civil and criminal fines.
Around the country, drug companies are still working to influence state Medicaid drug cost controls to keep their profits flowing. An employee of opioid maker Insys Therapeutics and called Medicaid agencies to get prior approvals, pretending to be from doctor's offices, even for patients who did not need the company's painkillers, according to one report.
Research recently showed that cancer patients who choose alternative medicines over standard are more likely to die.
The next news item concerns complementary medicine, which apparently does not do any harm if people use it alongside conventional surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. However, when people opted out of proven treatments to choose herbs, homeopathy, or other alternative treatments, they were twice as likely to die from their cancer.
Living in Florida, many of us take our pets to the beach, especially dogs. Many, like Labrador retrievers, love going in the water. But even with these dogs, you must be careful because they can get sick and sometimes die after exposure to salt ocean water.
It's called salt water poisoning. When sodium builds up in a dog's body, it can cause brain swelling, seizures, and death. And when the body has too much salt, its cells release their water, attempting to balance out the salt content in the blood. This causes brain cells to shrink, and it can trigger seizures.
Remember that most common signs of saltwater poisoning include vomiting, diarrhea, excessive thirst, lack of appetite, and lethargy. The body works very hard to regulate the balance of salt and water.
And dogs can also drive their body's salt content too low if they drink too much fresh water when swimming in a lake or pool. Also, in these hot weather days, remember to cool your pet by providing lots of fresh water and shade.
Make sure to put water in a large bowl that won't get knocked over, and keep your dog inside when you aren't at home. And of course, make sure your home stay cool with air conditioning and fans.
Take your dog for walks during cooler hours of the day, and beware of the hot asphalt, which can burn their paws. You may not believe it, but dogs, especially those with thin coats, can actually still get sunburned.
It is important that your dog have good food, lots of available water, and a comfortable place to sleep. A bed covered with a Kevlar material can help waterproof their bed and keep the dog's skin dry. But it's not only the heat of the summer that hurts pets. You need to keep the ticks and fleas and other critters off of them. So regularly inspect your dog after being outside. There are many alternatives that are economical to protect your dog's skin from these creatures.
Now here's a great idea for pets. You can actually make homemade iced treats, such as peanut butter popsicles, which can even help out with your dog's internal temperature.
If you see your dog with excess panting, a rapid heartbeat, difficult breathing, excessive thirst or lethargy, think dehydration and move your pet into a cool area. Apply cold towels to their head, neck, and chest, and run cool, not cold water over them.
According to FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, MD, they are taking steps to strike a balance between combating opioid abuse and misuse by curbing overprescribing and still providing appropriate care for the patient's chronic and end-of-life pain.
Dr. Gottlieb said that the agency's ultimate goal is to support improved prescribing practice while encouraging the development of new non-opioid treatments.
Dr. Gottlieb stated again that they won't lose sight of the needs of Americans living with serious chronic pain or coping with pain at the end of life. He went on to say, quote, "They too face significant challenges." So on July 9th, they held a meeting supposedly to listen to the viewpoints of patients living with chronic pain to better understand the effects on their lives. Per the FDA's request, attendees chronicled the various treatments they've used to treat their chronic pain, from non-pharmacologic interventions to over-the-counter medications, right up to opioids, as well as their frustrations in having the ongoing opioid epidemic making getting their legitimate pain medications more difficult.
Several hundred individuals were expected to participate in the public forum, either in person or via webcast.
You can still get your voice heard by sending written statements through September 10th. You can use Southside Medical Center's special link, bit.ly/haltchronicpain, all one word, or just enter hashtag haltchronicpain. Again, that's bit.ly/haltchronicpain, or enter the hashtag Halt Chronic Pain. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.